Yeah.
Good morning.
It's always so funny. Good morning, everybody. Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson here at the House of the Rising Sun. So, what I was going to say is so funny because I have two computers sitting next to each other, one that has the radio equipment on it, and one that I use for Pal Talk. And I call you from the one that has the radio equipment on, okay? Sitting right next to me. It calls you in California, and you answer in California before it calls me sitting right next to it, and I answer here. So that's why sometimes you'll be on and I won't be because it hasn't called me yet.
Oh, okay.
So this is what's so, I mean, this is what is so insane. Because the reason it hasn't called me yet is because even though it's sitting right next to me here, I mean, I'm touching the computer with my hand, both computers with my hands, it still has to send a signal to a router, to a tower, to a satellite, back to another tower, maybe to another satellite, then to another tower, then to you, then to call me, then. I mean, it's just crazy. All this routing around the universe so that I can talk to you and talk to myself at the same time yet I'm in the same room. That's how insane this whole thing of time and space is. It's just
Isn't it though? Isn't it though? It's what an elaborate system we've made up, that we, that is a convincing dream that presents the illusion that there's these differences. In order to compensate for these differences in time and space, we need this, vast technological infrastructure of stuff in order to do the simplest thing, which is share the idea that separation is impossible. How ironic is that, huh?
it's just so hilarious. And
Yeah.
that people don't, I mean, people do look at it and say, wow, this seems really strange, or this doesn't make sense, and I don't really get it. But no one really seriously questions it and says, how
Right.
can this be? How can this be possible? And you know, I shouldn't say no one, because I questioned it, and I think you probably didn't. You know, everybody's questioned it all along, like, none of this makes any sense to me. And if you grew up like I did in the church, believing that there was a you know, someone in charge that was making things make sense or not make sense, then you know, you're thinking, well, that person must be really incompetent, because obviously they don't know how
Really?
things really work.
They must not have read the manual on best practices, right? Because obviously there's some flaws in the production version.
Yeah, so somehow or the other, this, you know, the beta test is did not work the way we expected it to. So, and
Cool.
yeah, we continue. It's crazy.
Yeah, and forgetting all the time that the reason why there's these bugs and manufacturing flaws and design flaws and in this system, that what we would call problems, is that we built them in. They're intentional. We made sure that there were problems so that we would have reason to continue the dream and continue investing in the dream and continue to believe that, we are hero of the dream. And that was the section that crossed my mind this morning was as a possible candidate, since we haven't talked before the recording started about what we might talk about. I was thinking, well, how about the hero of the dream? That's always such a good one to review if that sounds of interest. And we can certainly talk about other things, but that one I find bears repeating, just because there's so much of that. Does that sound like something
Oh, I think it's
worthwhile?
great, and yeah, it's no wonder. You know, Artin and Persa had Gary read and reread that, you know, day after day after day until,
Exactly.
I mean, because honestly, until I really get my role in this charade, until I really understand what it is that I think I'm investing in, and what it is that I think I'm going to receive from it, I'm going to continue to do the same insanity. And it reminds me, you know, I used to, this is something that a lot of people don't know. In fact, most people don't know about me, but I used to be a compulsive gambler. And I just was like caught up in, buying a lottery tickets or, if there was a way that, I could go someplace and gamble like, Cripple Creek or, Las Vegas or something like that. You know, I was just like very excited about it. I loved to do it. And it's so crazy because, it's a lose-lose situation. Gambling itself is not set up for a person or individuals to become wealthy. It's set up so that people who run gambling firms and casinos and stuff like that get wealthy. But,
Of course.
But it appears because of the way that they feed out wins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It appears that there's a chance that, yeah. And that, somebody sometime is going to win that, what is what is that Powerball is up like to some huge amount of money now. And even my husband is coming home and saying the Powerball is up, which, he would never, ever, ever recommend to me to buy a lottery ticket. This has been a long time ago, but it's still, I went through some serious, practically put my family in financial ruin because I was so convinced that I was going to win. And that's the same thing that this.
Well, and interesting you mentioned that. That's a great metaphor, by the way, just to back up a little bit. But the putting your family in financial ruin. Well, isn't that what we all do when we judge that the ego's gamble is worth the risk? Every time we think that the space-time dream drama metaphor still has some viability, we're gambling on a crapshoot that's a boondoggle and a hoax and a fraud and whatever verbs and adjectives and nouns we want to throw at it, but it's fake. It's just there's nothing there. But that's the beauty of it is when we realize that, we can back out any time. I mean, once we, start, bumping into all the fire hydrants and the parked cars and the cul-de-sac, trying to get through, if we just turn around and look at the way we came and use the 180 degree undo button and just say, oh, let's just put it in reverse. And calmly, look over our shoulder and get the guidance we need, not try to do it all ourselves, but, just back out and get on the main thoroughfare, which is, I think that's the forgiveness process metaphorically too. We just have to stop, gambling on this idea that this little cul-de-sac of a thought system, which has got us nowhere, even though we've gone around in circles, looking at the three or four little houses in that court over and over again, thinking that of course this really seems like millions because of the mirrors that the ego uses it, but it seems like there's all these, I haven't tried this idea yet, this has got to work, the used cars, try this one. I'm so grateful to Tomas Vieira for that metaphor, because he shared that one in a workshop I attended years ago, and the ego is as the used car salesman, just try this one more time. I know it's going to work.
Exactly. What you remind me of, and you may have seen one of these recently too. Somebody just posted one on Facebook a few days ago. There's like lots of different videos on YouTube of people trying to back out of a parking space.
Uh-huh.
And okay, so they parked in this parking space and then they're trying to get out of the parking space and they're doing everything other than backing straight out, turning.
I think I might have seen the same clip. Yeah.
So this person is trying to get out of this parking lot and they're backing up and going forward, backing up and going forward, backing, turning completely. I mean, they've turned around like several different times during this whole thing. They run into another car, they back into another car, and eventually the person gets out. and is able to drive out of the parking lot. But that's what that, you know, and I've had that situation myself, even, you know, because I, you know, have, I'm one eye, I only have one eye. So I don't have any depth perception. It's really hard for me, reasons I don't drive. So, but that's it. You know, you got yourself into this place. And if you've ever done this, and I've done it too many times in not just parking, but other ways, got myself into a place that then I was wondering, how in the hell am I going to get out of here? And the only way that you can get out is to go back the way you came, exactly what you said. But we try everything else, because not because we think we have a better idea, but because ego wants so badly to be right, that it will not settle for being wrong, even if it's killing itself doing it.
Let's solve the problem from within the dream, you know, within the outer shield of oblivion of space and time and bodies and seemingly separate selves and with their personas. Let's figure it out from there, says the ego. Because it's terrified that we might back up and see it, well, you know, mixing metaphors here, from above the battleground and see that whole battlefield is just a massive war zone that really is nothing, but it seems like this immense battlefield of you know, foiled attempts and aborted you know, means to escape, you know, with strewn with the bodies and detritus of all of this, you know, this warfare and just you know, horrifically unsuccessful attempts to try to fix the dream, you know, but we keep trying. We keep putting on the cape and the, you know, the letter on the chest, and you know, after we get out of the phone booth and you know, think that we're going to fly off and summon superhuman powers and you know, don the heroic garb and solve all the problems here, but it doesn't happen
It
that
doesn't
way.
happen
But
that way.
the real superhero is the thought system that we all have, that we all have access to 24/7, 365, that A Course in Miracles calls, you know, Jesus, and not in the traditional sense, but in the Course sense, the author of that material, and Holy Spirit, again repurposing another traditional Christian term to be one that reminds us that, you know, and unlike the religious version that is all about the body and fixing the dream, this one is about, you know, completely shifted toward shifting the mind and looking past that outer shield of oblivion to the inner shield, seeing that that's nothing there. And you know, when you're talking about the, you know, the parking lot video and you know, the cul-de-sac metaphor of we've tried everything but, you know, backing out, you know, and that's the last thing we try. You know, it's kind of like, where'd you find it? The last place I looked at. Well, yeah, okay.
Well, and here's the deal too, is, oh, go on.
But that meta that oh, I just to finish that thought. I
Yeah,
was
finish
thinking
that
that,
thought.
but that it ties in perfectly with that phrase in the course of, you know, of all the things that, you know, caused your problem. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, that caused your grief, never, you know, once did you think your guilt was among them. You know, it's like that's the last place we want to look, is the unconscious guilt, because we think there's something there. We think that not only is the outer shield of oblivion real, because that's the ego's primary, you know, front line of defense strategy, but the inner line of defense is the inner shield of oblivion, the unconscious guilt. Oh no, you can't look at that. You can't look at the contents of your mind carefully, because you'll die. You'll perish. And yet, the irony is that the self that we think we are, the hero of the dream, is just a hero only in a dream, and doesn't really have any eternal, truly effective existence. And but it's only by looking at it that we realize that the self that we really are can look at that and not disappear. And in fact, that's the only reality that we've ever had, and we get to that, I think, by looking at opportunities to forgive ourselves moment to moment, and using the world as a classroom, and as a reminder that we are a mind, and then we realize that the only thing that was the cause of our suffering was the guilt, And having looked at it and with Holy Spirit's help, you know, watch it dissolve step by step, then we realize, oh, yeah, we really can leave the dream. And we do it, you know, progressively every time we catch ourselves identifying with the dreamer and saying, that hasn't worked. Let's try a different approach.
that's not me. Exactly. Yeah. Huh. And you know, you can do that. And before this thought of the parking lot thing goes, the thing that's so cool about this whole watching these videos of people trying to back out, like I said, I've done it before myself, is that you're watching it from a surveillance camera.
Mm-hmm,
so you actually are above the battleground. And when you are above the battleground, you can see, well, God, she could have just kept going in that direction for 3 more feet and she'd have been completely clear. Or just turn the wheel now. You know, you see the moves that should be being made because you're in a place where you're above the battleground.
Yeah.
And you're not the hero of the dream. You're not stuck in the car trying to figure out which way to turn. And really, your consciousness can be in either one of those places at any time. It's up to me to decide where I want to be. So I love that. Let's go look at that hero of the dream.
Yeah. But before we do, there's one more section that what you just said reminded me of, and that is our cues for inference are wrong. That was the phrase that stuck in my head, and I find it to be a really valuable phrase when I catch myself having that little limited vision, like you say, this where I'm trying to see things from within the maze rather than, you know, climbing above it and seeing the mice trying to, you know, way off in a place that's not going to work, you know, but only from that perspective, you know, because our cues for inference, meaning the beliefs and the thoughts and certainly the identification with the self and all of its issue that we do daily, you know, moment to moment, it's not effective. It's not wrong in the sense of evil, sinful, or wicked, like Ken Wapnick says. Is, you know, none of those adjectives really apply in truth, although those are the ones we've given to ourselves that we need to undo. And that's how when we look at it from above the battleground, seeing that nothing happened here in this puppet show, in terms of our eternal self that we've so identified with, we can't even imagine that we have it and that we are it and we all are it together. That dream figure seems so real that we've completely erased for all intents and purposes our real identity. And then we get paranoid thinking that, oh, I'm going to, you know, somehow blot out this little fake identity. Well, the fake identity is what we need to look at. And as we do that, the real identity, the light through the cracks gets, you know, brighter and brighter. So anyway,
exactly.
Anything else before we read a little bit?
No. That's absolutely true. And that is another reason why we practice, because it's the practice that makes the experience. When I have the experience, then it becomes real to me. Then I want to continue to practice because I'm realizing the reality of my situation rather than imagining myself to be this character. And so doing these practices over and over and over and just saying the same, you know, silly, simple things. I could see peace instead of this. Mm-hmm. Nothing I see here means anything. I mean, these.
these I'm never things, upset for the reason I think.
these catchphrases or mantras or whatever are actually the instructions of how to look at things when things seem to be going awry. And so
exactly.
we have it. It's not just a thing you say. It is actually a switch that changes your mind and you begin to actually see, oh, okay. And it's just like that parking thing. How many times have I just stopped, put the car in park, gotten out of the car, walked around the car, seen how far away things really are from where I'm at, seeing how far could I actually back up if I need to, you know, just step out of the role and just look at your situation and determine where you're really at. And then you can get back in the car and drive and you know where you're going. But unless you do that, and that's, every time I see these things, I'm like, just stop the car, get out of the car, look where you're at. You don't have to stay in there and keep going back and forth. And that's, I'm telling that to myself right now.
It's a fog, isn't it? It's like driving. Yeah, I was just guess it's like driving in heavy fog, isn't it? I mean, and from above the fogscape, we have a perspective that that basically cuts through that like a laser. But the looking forward from within a fog bank, you don't see much. But we don't realize that the fog is just this little thin layer. Actually, that reminds me. Before we'll get to the reading, but it reminds me that years ago when I was getting my pilot's license here in California, in fact, right here in Livermore, California, I would go out and on weekends particularly, I'd go out and, do after I'd soloed, I did practice flights. And one morning I got up early, thought, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But it was still a little bit of fog on the ground here in the valley. And I knew that just above that fog layer, it would be very clear and I could see, for miles because it was just a low fog. But when you're climbing out of that, you don't, sometimes you don't see much until you just break through and you realize, oh my gosh, it's a gorgeous sunny day above the clouds. It's just it's yet another metaphor that fits in with our parking lot one. Are you
Oh
still
yeah,
there, Lynn? Okay.
I muted my mic because I was coughing. But
Oh, okay.
yes, and so yes, that's it exactly. And again, when you're a pilot and you're flying along, and there's I've just been on an airplane not that long ago, and there was a lot of turbulence, and so the pilot said, "We're going to go up above this." And sure enough, we went up, a couple thousand feet and got out of it.
That's it.
And that's really what you got to do. Just, isn't it just so cool too that, it seems like, we're just pulling these metaphors out of our hats here, but in reality, those were put there. The Holy
Yes.
Spirit went through and put this everywhere, symbols and signs of our true situation, so that we could look at that and think, oh, okay, this is how I can see this. This is how it can work for me. And really, honestly, once I discovered that I was really the one who was in control of my own thinking, it made things so much simpler. Rather than, of course, to believe that I'm the victim of my, the world and my body and society and culture and the thoughts of my ancestors and all that, when I realized that none of that had any bearing whatsoever on my reality, and that I was the one who was in control of my own thinking, it switched everything for me so that I could ask for the miracle and expect it and receive it and step out of the car and look at where things are, or look at the, get up above the clouds. All those things are made possible by that one decision that, I really want this miracle. I really want to see the last unanswered question. I want to know what I denied because it was the truth? And, once I made that decision, then everything came to me in like quick, whenever there's a problem. So, what gratitude I have for this clarity, and the only way that that would ever have been a part of my thought psyche whatsoever is because of this Course in Miracles. Wow. What a
And
gift.
it's really our decision, isn't it, to want to look at the mind that really is the reason why we're able to do it. A moment ago when you said made possible by my mind lapsed to made possible by viewers like you. I was lapsing into a PBS telethon mode, I guess. But anyway. So should we read a little of The Hero of the Dream?
Absolutely, let us do it.
Okay. You want to start? Are you
Yeah.
there? Or I'm there
I
if you're
am
not.
there. Okay, yes. Okay. So, the
Okay.
hero of the dream. This is chapter 27, section 8. The body is the central figure in the dreaming of the world. There is no dream without it, nor does it exist without the dream, in which it acts as if it were a person to be seen and be believed. I just want to stop right there because this is a stunning statement by Jesus about there is no dream without the body, nor does the body exist without the dream, in which it acts as if it were a person to be seen and be believed. There are so many people who are looking at this Course in Miracles and thinking that it's referring to health and healing, as if it's health and healing of the body. Refer to, I mean, there's so many times that they're looking at this course and thinking it is relating to a healing of the body, a saving of the body, whatever. Jesus is telling us the body only exists in the dream, and it doesn't exist without the dream. It's not a person. It's not a this, and it's not just the body he's talking about. It's the entire ego, the entire thought system that goes with the body. So just right here, he's
Exactly.
establishing this does not even exist except in a dream. And it is not to be seen or be believed. It's not to be believed. Okay, so sentence three says it takes the central place in every dream, which tells the story of how it was made by other bodies, born into the world outside the body, lives a little while and dies to be united in the dust with other bodies dying like itself. In the brief time allotted it to live, it seeks for other bodies as its friends and enemies. Its safety is its main concern. Its comfort is its guiding rule. It tries to look for pleasure and avoid the things that would be hurtful. Above all, it tries to teach itself. Its pains and joys are different and can be told apart. That's the whole purpose of all this.
Sounds like a
Go on.
I was thinking it sounds like a plot for a very dysfunctional Hallmark movie to me. Usually we like to gloss over all this, but it's like it's a pretty pathetic script that the ego has, but we don't usually like to look at it at face value and see how ridiculous it is. I mean, it's crazy, and why wouldn't we have anxiety and frustration and this whole undercurrent in our mind of just insane stuff if we were if it weren't if it wasn't for the insane thought system that it's all based on, that the idea that we could possibly be limited to a body and not only limited to it but completely identified with it. And to the point where we've forgotten we have a mind, and your comments, prefacing this are just so right on, Lynn, because that was one of the things I think that I appreciated the most of all of Ken Wapnick's teachings, is the reminder that we can't get too far from the metaphysics of the course, that it's all about the mind and it has nothing to do with fixing the body or the body's world or the body's whatever. So anyway, and this section highlights this so wonderfully. Shall I read the next one?
Go right ahead.
Okay. This is paragraph 2 of section 8 of chapter 27 in the text of A Course in Miracles, the hero of the dream that Lynn and I are reading, if you just joined us. The dreaming of the world takes many forms because the body seeks in many ways to prove it is autonomous and real. Yeah, we want to be hip autonomous, right? That's one of my favorite puns lately.
I
It
like
puts
that.
things on, it's things on itself that it is bought with little metal discs or paper strips the world proclaims as valuable and real. I think we can all figure out pretty quickly what that's referring to. Moolah. It works to get them doing senseless things and tosses them away for senseless things it does not need and does not even want. It hires other bodies that they may protect it and collect more senseless things that it can call its own. It looks about for special bodies that can share its dream. Sometimes it dreams it is a conqueror of bodies weaker than itself. But in some phases of the dream, it is the slave of bodies that would hurt and torture it. Well, I mean, turn on the news. Read the paper, flip open your computer, and you know, look at anything.
Look at Facebook.
Look at anything. I mean, the whole world, like Ken says, is propaganda for itself, given that we don't question the ego thought system. You know, it's this dystopian dream that will remain a dystopian dream as long as we, you know, don't question the basic premise, which is ego's insanity of separation.
It's just hilarious. Because unless you're really looking at the world this way, and just challenge anybody to just today, just stop and whatever situation that you're in, look at the roles that you have assigned to all the people and the situations around you. So, you know, is this person here to serve me? Is this person here to argue with me? Is this person here to, be my friend, my love? You know, are they helping me? Or, you know, I mean, how many times do we look at any individual that you come in contact with and either want them, accept them, reject them, love them, hate them, whatever, based on a role that you gave to them and an expectation of performance that you gave to them and your judgment and assessment of whether or not they met that criteria for you? All of it is all subjective and in my own mind, my imaginary world. And I peopled my imaginary world with you and made you be the kind of person that I expect you to be. And if you act outside of that, I'm not going to like you. These rules are just so insane.
Oh, yeah.
We made them all up.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And excellent points. And as you were saying that, Lynn, I couldn't help but flatten up, you know, and to echo and mirror what you just said, that, you know, we all collectively wrote that script and we made it so that there would be victims and victimizers and we would flip back and forth, you know, regardless of which, it, you know, we're still, you know, the victim of the unconscious guilt until we look at it. But what reminded me of this brought a smile to my face was thinking about the Monty Python skit where the guy, you know, talks to the receptionist and says, I'm here for an argument. You know, in other words, reminding us that, yeah, we intentionally came into this by default wanting to pick a fight, you know. And so he goes down the hall and she says it's, you know, such and such door on the left or right or whatever. And he you know, none of the doors are marked. And so he goes in the wrong door. And after a few minutes of, you know, this heated conversation, he says, what are you saying? And, you know, he says, I'm here for an argument. Oh, no, this is abuse. Arguments down the hall, you know. Anyway, if you haven't seen that Monty Python skit, it's probably, you know, what I just said will be wasted perhaps a little bit. But that's it. You know, we come in here with a chip on our shoulder. And and that's reflected in the course, too, elsewhere. I think it says something like, you know, if you spoke not of Christ to him, he won't speak of Christ to you. Phrasing that one again, too. But in other words, we've already predisposed and predetermined the outcome based on which thought system we go into any situation with. Yes. And that's the only thing that needs to change. We just need to change our inner teacher to the teacher of conflict and frustration and dysfunctional hallucination to the teacher of kindness that takes that same exact script, the same props, the same actors, the same set design, the same facility and set and everything and turns it into a comedy instead of a tragedy. Because the comedy happens when we see the joke and we see that we're the hero of the dream and we wrote the script, and it would be hilarious to assume that we're at the mercy of something if we wrote it.
Well, yeah, and the thing is not even just that, which, you know, that's a little esoteric, I think, the whole idea of we wrote the script, whatever, because, you know, it's hard for me to get that. But The thing is that I do know, absolutely without a doubt, is that I can change my mind at any time about what I think about what's going on. And here's another example. We have I have a grandson. He's 2.5 years old. You can move his toy, something he's playing with. He hasn't looked at it for 10 minutes, and you move it to, put it in the toy box or something like that, and he will act like you've tried to kill him. He cries and screams and carries on. Oh, wah, 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 wah. And yet you can say to him during all that big tirade where he's freaking out, and he doesn't do this very often. He's a very, very, very good kid. You can say to him, "Hey, would you like a cookie?" And his entire effect completely changes. He goes from being in the rage of upset and sorrow to cookie. That's how quickly your mind can change when you recognize that there's something you want more than what it is that you are experiencing. And so this is why we're learning this, is because he's pointing out to us, this is your own thinking that made all of this. You were the one that decided that you wanted that toy right here and not over there. You are the one, and you can make that as important as you want to you. And you can upset yourself and other people as much as you want about it. But remember, it's always as much as you want. And when you stop wanting that and decide you want something else, then you can stop doing that and there's no repercussions. That's the other thing that's so cool, is because Jesus tells us the Holy Spirit will undo all the effects of your wrong decision if you will let Him.
Yes, that is so comforting, isn't it? And I think we forget that too. So that's a great reminder, Lynn, that yeah, we haven't damaged anything. We what the calamity that we think that we're guilty of is so much more vast than we realize, and that's why we don't want to look at our mind, because we came in with the premise that we pulled this horrific thing off of shattering perfect oneness, because everything around us seems to be, propaganda for itself, propaganda for the idea that there's differences, and differences are important and real, and oh no, Mr. Bill, we've pulled this thing apart. How awful is that? But it's a dream. It's a dream.
It's a dream, and it is so funny. I've been watching a show on Netflix, and I don't know if you've seen this, but it's really very, it sounds insane. It is insane, but it's really cute. It's called The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I haven't heard of that one.
Have you heard? Okay, look it up on Netflix. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It's written by Tina Fey. And it's got Jane Krakowski. It's not so much about the people in the movie. The TV show. It's a show about a girl who was kidnapped and kept for 15 years in an underground bunker by a crazed preacher. He had like these four women that were his wives, and he kept them underground, and he told them that the world had ended, that we had destroyed everything and every living thing was dead, and they had to stay underground in this bunker.
Oh, how symbolic.
For 15 years they were underground in the bunker. They get rescued. Okay, the other three girls go back to Indiana, to they got donations and whatever. Kimmy decided to stay. She was in New York for some reason. She decided to stay in New York. Oh, they went to see Matt Lauer on the Today Show. She decided she was going to stay in New York. And so here you have this girl who has been in an underground bunker for 15 years and knew nothing about what's going on in the world, out in the world, not trying to make sure people don't know that she's one of these mole women, but she is unbreakable. And so you have to watch it, because the attitude of this character is so much what Jesus is telling us about what our life would be like if we had this attitude. And her attitude is like, wow, isn't this the coolest thing? Oh my gosh, you have, it's like cell phones and all kinds of things that we just take for granted, she sees as being incredible gifts. This is exactly what Jesus is telling us here, is that if we were able to get out of the bunker into the real world, and we could see it for what it really is, because she sees it in a completely different direction than everyone else in the thing. And it's a comedy. It's just, it sounds like it couldn't be funny, but it is so sweet and so beautiful, and she's such a great character. You would love it. So
I just found it.
Oh, okay.
And I also found one that reminded me of, which is Blast from the Past, if you haven't seen that one.
That's a great movie. Yes, Brendan Fraser. Yes, Blast from the Past.
Similar kind of plot, it sounds like, in terms of the concept, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, just ducking out from the so-called mainstream for a few decades and discovering things have changed a bit, kind of thing. But in both of those movies, I think we could find the metaphor of, well, nothing has hurt our reality during all of the, the craziness or lack thereof, what has happened, seemed to happen or seemed to not happen in the dream, that not one note in Heaven's Song was missed. Our Wednesday City group just read that line the other evening and it reminded me of how helpful that is when we realize that we don't have any cause for guilt. We don't have any cause for self-condemnation because none of this has made any impact on our eternal nature. And it's only from that perspective that we can really forgive ourselves. And we get glimpses of it by forgiving ourselves for the seeming specific things that come and go, including all the heroics that we think we are doing in the dream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Paragraph 3 just fits in perfect with this.
Yeah.
So the body's serial adventures. I love the way he says this. The body's serial adventures, like a TV series or a comic series or something. The body's serial adventures from the time of birth to dying are the theme of every dream the world has ever had. The hero, quote unquote, of this dream will never change, nor will its purpose. Though the dream itself takes many forms and seems to show a great variety of places and events wherein its hero finds itself, the dream has but one purpose, taught in many ways. This single lesson does it try to teach again and still again, and yet once more, that it is cause and not effect. And you are its effect and cannot be its cause. End of story. This is the whole purpose of the body, really, is to prove to me that it is really in charge. It really is the cause of everything that's happening to me. And that I personally can have nothing to do with what it's doing. I'm just a victim to its to its whims. I can't change it. I can't do anything about it. Even though I've seen over and over and over and over how I can change the body, and I do change the body, and I do change my purpose, and I do change my belief, and all these kinds of things, I still deny the power of my own mind.
Oh, we all do it so frequently, and that's the whole strategy. But there's cracks in that armor that happen, which is why we're having this conversation right now. Because obviously, we have had enough experience of seeing the flaw in that twisted logic of the ego to recognize that there must be a better way, and it's led us to A Course in Miracles. Somebody else on some other part of the planet might have found something else that's leading them to that non-dual metaphysical understanding, which may have completely different words or forms, but it's the same idea that we're not at the mercy of. And the real mercy, I was thinking as you were saying, here's another word that has been helpful to me lately, is the word mercy. And the real mercy is forgiving ourselves and forgiving everyone else, which helps us forgive ourselves because we think there's other people. And that's the mechanism that we have available to us to do that. And we would not be able to do it without that. But that's the real mercy, is letting ourselves and everyone else off the hook. And instead of being at the mercy of things that are outside our control, in the world of form, in the world of hero dream figures, you know, the action figures that populate our dream drama, we're instead the mind that is watching this drama. And that's where the mercy comes from, is by shifting that identity, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so if we just are willing to listen and see how we could possibly be the cause.
Right.
That was a huge shift for me, to start looking at how it could be possible that I was the cause, not the effect. And, you know, taking on responsibility for sight, you know, recognizing that actually everything that happens to me is of my own volition. I'm not the victim of the world I see.
Mm-hmm.
This is how these lessons are so helpful.
Yes.
To bring
yes.
you to the point where you actually can see this. So, so yeah, it's amazing. You want to go ahead and read paragraph 4?
Sure, sure. Thus are you not the dreamer, but the dream. And of course, this is the ego's assessment speaking here. And so you wander idly in and out of places and events that it contrives. That this is all the body does is true, for it is but a figure in a dream. But who reacts to figures in a dream unless he sees them as if they were real? The instant that he sees them as they are, they have no more effects on him, because he understands he gave them their effects by causing them and making them seem real. And that ties into another metaphor that I find so helpful when I remember to apply it and think of it, is that, you know, it's our whole life, all of our lives are like this massive interwoven screenplay in which there seem to be separate actors and places and props and stages, and yet there's just one playwright, and that's the decision-making faculty in the mind. And our signature, not the Bruce or the Lynn signature, but the decision-making mind signature that is on the bottom of every page of that screenplay, you know, every utterance, every, you know, we've endorsed it all, but we can unendorse, all right, we're not going to change the script, but we're going to change the narration script. And it's like switching from this sinister, malevolent, you know, sadistic director's cut audio that condemns everything and everyone, maybe not overtly, sometimes it's very covertly, but it's always, you know, leaves you with a horrible feeling and this dismal, you know, outlook on things when you're watching the movie with that director's cut. But if we look down at the controls, you know, symbolically in the mind, and realize, oh, I can go to the settings here and change that director's cut audio to our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit or the Jesus of the Course. And that director's cut looks at everything just the way this paragraph suggests, is that we have no, you know, we aren't at the effect of what happens in a dream, because we're the dreamer, we're not the dream figure. But we need to convince ourselves that slowly but surely by practicing this awareness that we can look at what's going on as if it were a dream, as if our daytime and nighttime dreams are the same, which the Course suggests, and that the only difference is that we've given it a difference that isn't there. You know,
but, right? We made those differences, just like any other differences that we see in the world, between personalities, between situations. We say, well, this is worse than that, or I remember when this happened and it was much more difficult than this. And we're the ones who are given all the different, making up all these differences between things. And if we were in this place where we were actually just not knowing, being in a place where we do not know what anything is or what it's for, and we're not going to speculate on what it is or what it's for, we're just going to let ourselves be shown by giving up any investment that we have in the what we think it is or not. Okay,
Right.
this is the hardest thing to get out of the realm of trying to interpret the dream and to give it some kind of meaning, just to recognize that it is a dream and it has no meaning. We do that with our sleeping dreams. Oh, what did that mean? I dreamed that, I saw a hawk or a sparrow, or what did that mean? It means whatever you gave it in your mind, because you're the one, it's in your mind. This is not coming from somewhere else. To get this understanding that there's nothing coming from outside me that is giving me something or showing me something or telling me something. This is all coming from within. And so the world that I see is actually inside me. It's actually coming from my own mind.
Right.
This is really difficult for people to understand, because it is not intuitive. It's not something that it doesn't fit with the way that the body, the brain works, our understanding, our thoughts about physics and life and everything. We have little categories we can put everything into and say, oh, this is how it works and this is what it means. And I get that. I get that. No. You can't come from that place at all. You have to actually come from a place where I don't even know what the hell this is or what it's for. As I'm thinking about, going back into another movie, the movie The Little Mermaid. I don't know if you ever saw that cartoon Little Mermaid with, it was a very cute animated movie. And
Perhaps years ago.
yeah, years. It's an old Disney film.
Nephews, yeah.
And so, but it's this little mermaid, excuse me, and they live, on the bottom of the ocean, and they have things that have fallen out of ships or fallen somehow or the other got to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, okay.
And they don't know what these things are. They don't know what they're for, and so they're making up their own story about it, and she picks up a fork
Interesting.
and, what is this? And the character with her says, oh, that's for your hair. So she's combing her hair with a fork, and this is, we don't know what anything is for. We're making up our own.
Neptune's trident, maybe, huh?
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. We're making up a whole story about what we think things are and what they're for. And what Jesus is telling us is it's nothing and it's for nothing. Do Don't imagine that it is something and that it's for something. It has no meaning. You're giving it all the meaning that it has. And that's why we are reacting to these figures in the dream. This is why we're looking at these figures in the we're, I dreamed an ominous character came and killed me. It was a dream. You made it up. It was in your own mind. No, there was nothing from outside of you making that happen. Nothing from outside of me is making this happen. I'm dreaming it up myself right now. So when I recognize that, okay, it's not that now, if you're giving me some difficulty, I look at you and say, phew, well, you're just a dream character anyway. I don't do that. I look and see, here's a person who is in pain and suffering from some reason. I know that it comes from that my even knowing this comes from a place in me that thinks that it's in pain and suffering, and therefore can recognize pain and suffering in another. And so all I need to do is heal this in me, this belief that I have that I can suffer. And there's it heals the character, it heals the dream, it heals everything. It just puts you into a happier dream, because you're seeing that none of the effects of the dream are real.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up, Lynn. That's such an important point that when we look at what the perspective that this section and all the Course in Miracles altogether recommends, we can tell that we're not doing it properly, if you will, if we have any less compassion or appreciation for what ourselves or others are going through, and if it results in anything less than the optimal kindness, then we can pretty much bet that we've handed it to ego to misinterpret things. Because if we can see that it's a dream, the outcome should be that we feel not only closer, but ultimately one with everyone. And so we certainly wouldn't want to, in the least bit, propagate any suffering or any misery. And I think that's the awareness that then gives us the muscle that builds up over time, the mental muscle, not physical, that says, I can see this differently, and I can choose how to look at this by using Inner Kindness Teacher's translation of the script, and you know, watching the hero go about doing its shenanigans, including all the other seeming heroes that you know populate our script, and recognize that we're all in the same boat, and we have every reason to be completely compassionate and kind and tolerant in terms of our recognition, not necessarily in terms of behavior, but tolerant in terms of the assessment that we have for everyone is that we're all of spirit, we're all of perfect oneness, and we can bring that more and more to mind, and that will result in the greatest kindness ultimately. And that kindness really is a reflection of the realization that the unconscious guilt is unfounded for everyone. Nobody deserves that self-punishment, and we can share that in everything that we think, say, and do.
Absolutely, and this is why, as Course in Miracles students, as you know, people who are dedicating our lives to this, and I think you are, if you're here, I can't imagine that you know you'd be here because you know you just got fun giggles out of you know listening to people tell you about how your ego works and you know why you're feeling guilty.
Yeah. Why would we subject ourselves to that abuse? Oh no, sorry, that's down the hall. Yeah.
Exactly. But for us, because we do have this and we do know this, and this is not even fundamentally is so different than how the world works and how the people that you most you know come into contact with are thinking, that it's such a shifted perspective that it's unexpected. It's people, I know a lot of people, you know, think, I used to think they thought I was nuts. And maybe I was, and, you know, I might still be, I don't know. if you're really crazy, you probably don't even know it. But that people have become more loving, more receptive, more, you know, it does. I can always get a smile out of someone. I can always have a great, loving conversation with a person, even if they are, you know, angry or upset, you know, perfect strangers. It doesn't matter. I have relationships, and I can have a relationship with every single human being and every single being, not just human, that I come in contact with. I can have perfect loving relationships with these people and not expect to be attacked, not be in fear. Why? Because I know that they are the same thing as I am, and that their interests are the same as mine, and that their heart is the same as mine, and their being is the same as mine. It's that knowing of our sameness, in spite of, you know, what may appear to be great differences, in spite of that, to be able to just look and know that they are no different than I am. They are figures in this dream, the characters that they are representing. I'm the one who made up an ego for them. That's another thing Jesus tells us. You've made up an ego for everyone and for yourself. And so I'm the one who's made up this ego that I'm projecting on them. And so whatever it is that I see when I look at them is really absolutely straight on reflection of what I think about myself. And so this is why you and I, Course in Miracles students, what other thing do we have to do in this world but to be kind and to be love and to operate in a way that is strictly for Holy Spirit, strictly for our awakening. That's it. What else would we want to do?
That is. That's it. And really, and that kindness comes about by looking at the ego's unkind thought system and not condemning it. And looking at our investment in it and saying, oh, that's not evil. Like, I love how Ken Wapnick says, it's not sinful, evil, or wicked. It's just silly. It's just dysfunctional, ineffective, and a poor choice. You know, it doesn't warrant condemnation. It doesn't warrant beating ourselves up. It just warrants jumping back into the car, putting it in reverse, getting out of the cul-de-sac, and getting back on the thoroughfare of the real life that we never left. You know?
Exactly. So, exactly. Anyway,
this is all right. I just realized, I think we've already run over a few minutes, haven't we?
So, I know our time is up.
It goes by so fast. Yeah. Well, and we only got four paragraphs into the Hero of the Dream, but it's such a great section. Maybe
this
we can
stuff is rich. And just to go through one paragraph and to really understand what he's trying to tell us here is such a blessing. I mean, really, it's so helpful. So thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you, Lynn. It's always a joy.
All right. And I will replay this later. I'll send you a copy of the recording.
Great.
So once again, thanks for joining us here at the House of the Rising Sun on Awakening Together Sanctuary. Bruce Rawls, I will talk to you next week.